Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Friday, June 17th. Hope you're ready for a big weekend. Father's Day weekend. Don't forget Papa. Should be a great time, and looking forward to the next couple of hours with you. At the bottom of the hour, you'll hear my two-part conversation with Audrey Assad, Catholic singer, songwriter. If the Eucharist is the bread of angels, Audrey's got the voice of angels, in my opinion. Just a spectacular voice. And it sings stuff that's deep and profound, and that really reflects, I think, in many ways, the profundity of her own faith. So we'll talk to her a little bit, though, less about music and more about her own ancestry. She wrote an article I noticed in the website WeWelcomeRefugees.com about her father, who himself, along with his mother and his siblings, was a Syrian refugee. Now, he wasn't a refugee from a civil war like what's going on in Syria right now, but he was a refugee nonetheless. And I think Audrey wrote the article both out of pride in her own heritage and the remarkable story of her father's family and all that they endured and the fortitude and God's providence and faithfulness in the midst of it all, but also to put a face on the refugee issue. Because, you know, we talk about refugees, and particularly from Muslim-dominated countries like Syria, and it's very easy to talk about it in the abstract. And certainly now after Orlando, there are increasing calls similar to presidential candidate Donald Trump to ban or severely curtail the reception of immigrants, particularly from predominantly Muslim countries like Syria. Which I think is misguided. Again, not that we shouldn't vet refugees, but as has been pointed out numerous times, there's never been an act of terror committed in this country by a refugee. Yes, by some immigrants, for sure, but most of them, like the Orlando shooter, for example, American citizen. It's much tougher to get into this country as a refugee. So we will talk to Audrey about the legacy of her father, and we'll also, by her permission, get to listen to a little of Audrey's music as well, which will be nice. Then in the second hour, a couple of guests, 7 o'clock, top of the hour, Mary Graham will be back with us. She's been with us a couple of times this week, down from beautiful Umatilla, Florida. I just like saying that, Umatilla. She'll be on to talk a little bit about the Blessed Mother and what it means to be consecrated to Jesus through Mary. And we'll talk about that a little bit. I know I think it was last year on this program, a little over a year ago, we talked and we went through a whole series. There's a beautiful booklet and process called 33 Days to Morning Glory. It's based on the Marian devotion of St. Louis de Montfort. And we'll try to explain Marian devotion a little bit, particularly if you're not Catholic. You may be put off by that idea a little bit. No need. The Blessed Mother always points us to her son. And then we'll talk next hour as well with Father Chris Clay. Father Chris, who is a priest in the Diocese of Lexington, he sent me an article a couple weeks back from the New York Times on about how you will marry the wrong person. Wasn't saying that some will marry the wrong person. It was saying that everybody will marry the wrong person. And I kind of leave that hanging a little bit so you'll know what we're talking about. But he thought it was a great article, and I thought, hey, if you think it's a good article, you're passing it on to me, Father Chris, then let's come on the radio and talk about it. So he's willing to do that. And, of course, we'll give out our What Were You Thinking Awards, spin the Dollar Catechism wheel, and all the rest here on the program today. If you want to be a part of it, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or give me your response on Facebook or on Twitter, Mike Allen Show the handle. My question of the day will come to you in the next segment. By the way, we're on day 4 now, I think it is, of Rodent Gate. Still no capture of any mouse in the house. And this is making me nervous. I'm also I haven't seen one scurry through our family room lately either, even though I sat in there for just a little bit yesterday. So don't know what's going on there. Our traps, none of them have been sprung. They're still sitting there with their dollop of peanut butter on there. So I don't know what's going on with that. We'll keep you posted. Now, my wife did wake up, she said, not last night, but the night before, in the middle of the night with one of our two cats. Our two cats, by the way, whose job security, if I could hire and fire, they'd be getting their pink slips because, come on, you got two cats, you shouldn't have two mice, which we apparently do. But she saw one of our cats sitting there holding a wriggling mouse in its mouth. My wife gasped, by which the cat proceeded to drop the mouse, who went scurrying back under, behind the piano, I think. So, I do not like this one bit. So, hopefully, things will be taken care of soon. Here's some good news as you start your day. I was thinking about this morning on the way in as the morning darkness still lay across the land. You know, you've heard that song by Alan Jackson and with Jimmy Buffett called It's 5 o'clock Somewhere, which he's on the job or whatever, and, you know, he's had enough of it. He's ready to walk away, and five o'clock, happy hour. You know it's 5 o'clock. It's drinking time somewhere in the world, so that's his excuse to leave. Not a bad song. Not one of my favorites, but it's not a bad song. I was thinking about the Mass in much a similar way. No matter where you are, no matter what time it is, typically if you hit the top of the hour, you can guarantee that somewhere in the world, at that very moment, people are gathering around an altar to celebrate Holy Mass. It's one of the things I love about being Catholic, of course, is not only the gift of the Mass, which is so central to our faith, but also the unity of the church, the universal scope, the sheer Catholicity of the church. And as I've talked to friends who've been to Mass in Vietnam, who've been to Mass in Switzerland, who've been to Mass in Bolivia, I mean, all wherever they go, maybe a different language, a different culture of people, the music may sound a little different, but they can follow along because the Mass is the Mass is the Mass. And somewhere in the world, well, no matter what hour of day it is, there are believers who are gathered around with a priest there, the sacramental presence of Christ, both priest and victim, offering the holy sacrifice of the Mass, making present anew in the world and in that very moment the infinite graces that have been poured out through our Lord's sacrifice of himself on the cross. Some great quotes about the Mass and the importance of the Mass, by the way. And this is what you lose when you abandon the idea of the Eucharist as a sacrifice and not just a memorial meal. Usually when you say that the Eucharist communion is a memorial meal only, then you typically reduce even the meaning of memorial, that it's sort of a remembering back. Oh yeah, we remember this most meaningful point in history when Jesus gave his life for his bride, the church, and he shed his blood for the sins of the world, and it's in that hope that we find our redemption. We look back on that. But memorial in the biblical sense and the Catholic understanding, which I think we get from our fathers in the faith, the Jews, is so much richer. As we've talked about, it's a making present, that once in history moment that yet transcends history and is made present to us through the mystery of the liturgy. We participate in some way through this gathering together and offering this holy sacrifice. We make present anew Christ's once and for all sacrifice, and we apply those graces to the world in this moment. And so to know that even while you're sleeping, or even while you're rousing from bed, or even as you're turning out the light to go to sleep at night, somewhere in the world, the Mass is being offered. Here's some great quotes about the Mass from some of the saints. The Mass is the most perfect form of prayer, Pope Paul VI says. In fact, we consider it, by the way, as Catholics, to be the greatest prayer, because we are offering ourselves in union with Christ, who is giving himself, as I said, the perfect victim upon the altar. Mass then becomes the perfect expression of what prayer is. St. Gertrude the Great says, "For each Mass we hear with devotion, our Lord sends a saint to comfort us at death." Once St. Teresa of Avila was overwhelmed with God's goodness and asked our Lord, "How can I thank you?" And our Lord replied, "Attend one Mass." The Holy Mass, Pope Benedict XV said, "The Holy Mass would be of greater profit if people had it offered in their lifetime, rather than having it celebrated for the relief of their souls after death." And I love this quote from St. Padre Pio, or St. Pio of Pietrelcina. "It would be easier for the world to survive without the Son than to do without Holy Mass." So you may not be able to be in Mass today. You know, daily Mass is optional if you're a Catholic. Sunday Mass, of course, is not, nor is it on holy days of obligation. You may not be able to attend for whatever reason. But as Mass is being offered, I want to encourage you to do something. Whatever concern, whatever need, whatever burden you're carrying in your heart and in your life right now, maybe a family situation, maybe something that's overwhelming you, maybe something that's hard for you to find peace about, even now in your heart, give it to God. Ask it to be offered at some altar, the nearest altar to you where they're having Mass. Have it offered to God with Christ, that it might be transformed by His grace and we might find the peace of knowing that all things are in His hands. We'll be back in just a minute to give you the question of the day. This is the Mike Allen Show. Minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. If you miss any part of the program here on Breadbox Media, you can always check it out through our podcasts, through iTunes, Google Play, or Podbean. You can also subscribe to our podcasts. Sometimes that's a good way to listen. If perhaps you've downloaded the app, maybe you were accustomed to listening on regular terrestrial radio. And it's tricky sometimes to be able to listen through your device live as it happens. Great way to catch up on the show or past shows. So check it out at breadboxmedia.com. Also, if you want to be a friend of the show, support the show through a small donation, you can be a friend of the show, have access to exclusive online content. Just go to breadboxmedia.com and click on the tab at the top, become a friend of the show. And I would love to have you. Got some interesting things on my friend of the show page. 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to be a part of the program today. 573-4-BREAD-4, call or text. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your thoughts on Facebook or on Twitter, Mike Allen Show, the handle. And I've got a question of the day today. I'm going to be talking with Andre Assad at the bottom of the hour, less about music and more about her own identity and pride as the daughter of a Syrian refugee. Her father, Roy Assad, who was born in 1955 and immigrated as a refugee with his mother and siblings when he was in his teen years to New Jersey, learned English, you got to love this, by watching Mork and Mindy in Gilligan's Island. Really a remarkable story of hard work and fortitude and pretty deep faith. And so she's going to share some of her story, put a human face on the refugee issue. But it prompted me to remember that virtually all of us, except for our Native American friends, of course, they may even have walked across the old isthmus. That's a hard word to say, isn't it? Isthmus, whatever, up there across the Bering Strait. Who knows what archaeologists are saying these days? But for the vast majority of us, we were immigrants. At one time. It's not our native land. So that's what I'm asking you. From what country or countries did your ancestors emigrate? And notice I'm saying emigrate, not immigrate. I don't want to get beat up by the grammar Nazis. Anyway, emigrate. When? How many generations back? And for what reason? Maybe you don't know why. But if you do know why, I think that'd be fascinating to know. you know, I've tried to do some research on that in my own family. The last name Allen, you sometimes hear that it could be English, could be Scottish, could be Irish. I'm pretty sure that at least through the Allens, going back a number of generations, I think all the way back actually to the 1600s, I think the Allens came across the pond to Virginia from England back in the 1600s. That's some of the genealogical research that I've done anyway. Now, I don't know through the other side of my family so much, but I'm pretty sure primarily English. So if you've got an Irish background, please don't hate me. But what about you? 5734BREAD4. Megan writes on Facebook, Ireland. Her daddy's maternal grandparents came from Ireland. And Paula says from her maternal side, came from Scotland and Wales. And her paternal side, there's some Cherokee Native American, also Germany, around 1850. So we'd love to hear from you. As I said, Audrey will share the story of her own father's immigration from Syria as a refugee. Just to put a little bit of a human face on this kind of hysterical season we're in terms of the way we treat refugees and immigration, and rooted largely in our fears. Now, I'm not saying we don't need to be vigilant. We do. But what a lot of people don't know is that when it comes to refugees, the vetting process is already very significant and very detailed. Checking out the U.S. Open yesterday, which got started. I'm looking at it. They had some serious weather problems there at Oakmont outside of Pittsburgh, which is going to leave a good chunk of the field having to play 36 holes today. That's not fun. That's a disadvantage, I think, in many ways to start with. But the guys who did play yesterday, I don't know if anybody actually finished the round. I'm looking down the course here. Somebody's got, well, I think we had four guys out of the 56 who got out there yesterday. No, I'm sorry. Four guys out of the however many, 78 people who got out there yesterday. Only four guys were able to finish their round. And the leader right now, Andrew Landry, who is at 3 under after 17, Bubba Watson. You know, Bubba seems to have a game suited to Augusta National with the big, high, booming drives. Not always so accurate. Yet here's Bubba Watson in a very tight layout sitting there at number two. Boy, that'd be quite a jewel in his crown in terms of historical greatness if he could pull off a U.S. Open in addition to the Masters. And then you go on down from there. Like I said, a bunch of big names did not tee off yesterday, including Phil Mickelson. Phil Mickelson did not get off, so he'll be playing this morning. Rory McIlroy, bad day, 4 over par, 7 shots back. And let's see, I didn't see what Jordan Spieth did. Let me search that up. +1 after 11 holes for Jordan Spieth. Matt Kuchar sitting there at 1 over. So, you know, as I've said before, it's Father's Day weekend. Whoever made the decision, and I don't know, it's been a long while. It's been a long while since this decision was made to place the U.S. Open final round on Father's Day. Absolutely genius and brilliant. Who's going to argue with Dad's right to watch the U.S. Open on Father's Day? So, whoever, thank you. I owe you my eternal gratitude. And then, of course, as I slept last night, well, really, before I went to bed, Cleveland was handing Golden State its head. And they would hold on to win 115-101 to set up a colossal Game 7, which I can only assume is scheduled to be played Sunday evening. Boy, what a sports day that'll be with the U.S. Open followed by that game there in Oracle Arena in Oakland. My friend Father Damian Ference, who was on the program celebrating Cleveland's win in Oakland the other day, he must be beside himself. I need to check his Twitter feed, because Father Damian loves his Cavaliers, and he's a Cleveland sports fan where they've had this title drought. Pretty dang impressive. And if LeBron can pull this off, which no other team has done, being down 3-1, coming back to win the series, then he has officially shut up his critics, all those yappers who say he can't pull it off on the big stage. Disappointed in Stephen Curry last night. Yes, there were some probably not great calls made in the game, but Stefan getting tossed with about 4 minutes to go and throwing his mouthpiece. He'll probably face a fine, but not a suspension. But, you know, I think the Warriors have lost a little bit of their boyish charm in the playoffs. Part of it's Draymond Green, but, you know, some of this stuff starting to wear a little bit thin, even for me, who likes the Warriors. So, you know, even though, yes, I want the Warriors to win, I think LeBron James is, by and large, a class act. I won't mind seeing the Cavaliers pull that off. What say you? 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Yeah, need to check out the Twitter feed. Father Damien, one of those rare tweeting priests. Let's see what he has to say. He surely did not watch that game last night and have nothing to tweet. Ah, here he goes. He tweets 6 hours ago, 12:23. Downtown Cleveland is crazy right about now. In extra large font. Let's see. He even tweeted a little smack talk to Sister Miriam James, whom I'm assuming is a Catholic sister who likes the Warriors. Tell sister to get ready for game 7! Exclamation point. let's see. Anyway, he said, couldn't find a ticket, so I'm outside with the rest of the city cheering on the Cavs. So, Father Damien, I got to get him on the program, especially if Cleveland pulls this off on Monday. He'll be beside himself. Anyway, all right, let's get on to our What Were You Thinking awards for the day, because we've got a few. As we say, go dumb or go home. And we've got a few options that we can choose from here. One of them we're going to give to nomination to Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli leader. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spent more than $600,000 of public funds on a six-day trip to New York, including $1,600 on a personal hairdresser. Now, I'm sitting here looking at a picture of Benjamin Netanyahu. He's got the classic comb-over. I mean, really? I mean, wouldn't a $15 trip to Supercuts do the trick? Benny? Sorry. Anyway, you're our first nominee. How about a second nominee? Let's see. Oh, this was at Rutgers University. A test of Rutgers University's emergency notification system caused a brief panic when students were notified of an armed suspect on this school's New Brunswick campus. Seems that they had sent out a campus-wide email saying that they would be testing the system, but not everybody got the email. And so when they got an emergency notification that there was a shooter on campus, believe it or not, people hadn't seen the email. And so there was a brief student-wide panic. Do you really think students read emails? Seriously? But for our winner, here's our winner, and talk about somebody going dumb or going home. This U.S. Senator, who, when talking about why we couldn't keep guns out of the hands of people who were on the no-fly list, he made the comment that due process is what's killing us right now. He said that phrase several times. Due process is killing us. Well, really? Isn't that kind of like a fundamental American principle? Anyway, back with more. This is the Mike Allen Show. Welcome back into the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media. Bottom of the hour, just a few minutes, we're going to be hearing my conversation with Audrey Assad, talking about her father, who is a Syrian refugee immigrant, and how proud she is of her heritage. Our question of the day, what's your heritage? What country did your ancestors immigrate from, when, and why, if you can recall? 5734BREAD4. Email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. Back to our What Were You Thinking Award winner, by the way. This is Senator Joe Manchin. He was talking about complaining about due process. Listen, I'm one who thinks, yes, can we please have some reasonable restrictions on guns so that somebody who's mentally unhinged can't get a hold of a weapon as easily as Omar Mateen evidently did. But when I hear the Senator Joe Manchin complaining about due process, it makes me rethink that. I mean, I guess if you have a constitutional right, you shouldn't want that easily taken away. And to hear this senator say multiple times, not good, those are not good clips for your reelection bid when you're saying what's killing us right now is due process. Just saying. Anyway, let's take a quick perusal through history on this day, June 17th. What are some other things that happened? On this day in 1703, John Wesley, the English Anglican clergyman and evangelist, born on this day. Now, somebody who's a former Methodist. I do think it's worth noting John Wesley died an Anglican priest. He never really wanted to start a new denomination. He sort of did that grudgingly. The more I read about John Wesley, though, the more I see he was more Catholic than he would have believed. Anyway, 1775, Battle of Bunker Hill took place. Was that the whole don't shoot till you see the whites of their eyes battle? I thought this was interesting. In 1839, in the Kingdom of Hawaii, this king issued the Edict of Toleration, allowing Roman Catholics the freedom to worship in the Hawaiian Islands. And the Hawaiian Catholics and the Cathedral of Our Lady of Peace, the diocese there, established as a result. By the way, the King of Hawaii only granted that he had taken away the right of Catholics due to pressure from Protestants. The only reason he agreed to tolerate Catholicism was because of the threat of the French, who came over to kick some butt and take names if they didn't. And so Catholics in Hawaii have the French to thank, believe it or not. On this day in 1943, two towering Americans born on this day, Barry Manilow and Newt Gingrich. Birthdays make for some strange partners, no doubt. Anyway, all right, let's get into my conversation with Audrey Assad. Audrey, as I said, the proud daughter of a Syrian refugee. This was my chat yesterday with the first part, anyway, with Audrey Assad. Audrey, June 26th is National Refugee Sunday. And, of course, after the events in Orlando, there's more talk than ever about refugees, and particularly Muslim refugees or refugees from predominantly Muslim countries. You wrote an article back in early May to put a human face on this issue. It's really the face of your own family and your own father.
Yeah, my dad was a refugee that came from Syria here in 1972. And so I'm a first-generation American, and my father was a refugee that came here in the 70s.
I got a whole new insight into you and to, you know, your source of strength and inspiration, because he has quite an amazing story, really. So kind of walk it through with us just a little bit in terms of your dad, his background, how he ended up here in the United States.
Yeah, my father was a sponsored child in Syria through a church program, and every month his family got, I think it was, you know, like $20 U.S. kind of thing in his name. And my grandmother, who had divorced my grandfather because he was an alcoholic and he was a rough guy to live with, she was on her own with three kids, and they were homeless for years. And they lived in a giant janitorial closet, essentially, in a church in Damascus. So that was where my father comes from, very poor and very, very humble beginnings. And again, a sponsored child, which I think is so beautiful to be, you know, the child of someone who benefited from that model. And it's such a worthy cause, you know, to send money to these families. And my dad is proof of that. And when he was in his early teens, my grandmother moved them to Beirut, to Lebanon, to try to seek refugee status, which they weren't refugees of war, but she, you know, was refugee of an economic type. And she was eventually able to get that status from the diplomats there. And they sent her and the kids over here. They paid for their plane tickets, but they were on loan. So my family, you know, my grandmother and my uncle and my dad, they paid that back by working in the States. And so they immediately came here with nothing, but I think they had $1,000 and then these loans to pay back on those plane tickets, you know. So they just hit the ground running. And my dad got a job sweeping floors in the factory, and he learned English on the television. And I think it's 7 years later, he was the top-selling State Farm insurance agent in the whole United States out of 17,000 people. He really wasted no time in becoming the best at everything that he did. And he was very motivated by the fact that he had come to America and found a refuge here.
It's a remarkable story. Your father, Roy Assad, and his background, and of course, his mother's courage. I love how you add the detail. He learned English watching Mork and Mindy and Gilligan's Island.
Did
he say, yeah. I hope he didn't think Nanu Nanu was actually something in English.
He actually thought it was hilarious, but I think he caught on that it was an alien language, yeah.
I love the maybe spin a little bit of the ambiance of what it was like to visit your Syrian grandmother.
She lived in a high-rise, low-income housing in Jersey City, New Jersey, and we went over there at least once a week, you know, while she was living there, while she was alive, and she had a very small apartment with a tiny kitchen, like a galley kitchen that you could only really fit one person in, but she would just cook all day, so we would smell her food, you know, coming down the hall, run down the hallway out of the elevator, and she'd pop her head out and say, welcome, 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 all the day. You know, she didn't have a lot of English, actually, so she didn't really have long conversations with us. She was so elderly when she came here that she never really picked the language up very much, but she's a painter, and so her whole apartment was covered in her own paintings, which I think is kind of amusing now that I look back at it, because most people don't do that with their art. But she, you know, loved to paint, and she had paintings everywhere, and paint, and empty canvases, and she had stacks of these Ideals magazines, which were just photographs of, they would be seasonal, and it'd be photographs of, you know, if it was Christmas time, it'd be like sleighs and snowmen and like these very American ideals of holiday and family and houses and decoration, you know. So she was very, I just see in my family this deep idealism, and that can have its drawbacks, but what it does is it, you know, that deep sense of idealism that things can be made better, that it really drives people to, what's the word, to set up their lives to succeed and to achieve things. And I see that in my family so much. I see it in myself. I think that I'm only beginning to see now that I'm an adult and I've, you know, achieved a few things on my own. I look back and I think, wow, like the things that my dad and my grandmother did out of almost obstinate, resilient, you know, desperation, the things, the ideals they clung to and the drive and the motivation they had, they had no choice but to have that, you know. I had a choice. I was born here and was given every opportunity to succeed, but my dad, my grandmother, my uncle, and my aunt, you know, they had to make their own way, and they really did, and I find it so inspiring, and I'm grateful for what I get to reap from that.
We're here with Audrey Assad, singer, songwriter. Yeah, it sounds like hearing about your grandmother and then with your dad, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, for sure. And then, as you've said, you've found within yourself maybe a resilience that you can't explain, you know, whether it's things not going as you planned for them to go, whether it was not, you know, not finishing, you know, your undergraduate work. Well, whatever. I mean, you haven't been in a place where you felt the need to panic.
Yeah, I can think of one very vivid example is I had a situation a few years ago where I was on a tour that lost a lot of money. And at the end of that year, I was in a very bad financial position. Sort of like having your car totaled, you know, you're upside down. You owe more than you have. And that can be a very overwhelming moment in a person's life. And I just remember I woke up the day after I got this, you know, my head around the issues. And I looked in the mirror and I said, make it work, Audrey. like, get to work and figure something out, because the options are, you know, either this or you're bankrupting your family here. You know, this is a big deal. But I felt this, like, sense of I can do this. And I don't even know if that's always true. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's when I think it's kind of funny, because I'm like, sometimes you just can't, you know, dig yourself out of that hole. It's not always possible, but I have this, like, this drive to do it and this sense that I can do it. And I just really think I get that from my dad. I don't know how realistic it always is, but it's certainly, it's helpful.
We'll have more of my conversation with Audrey Assad in the next segment. We'll let her music take us to the break. Minutes before the hour, just sitting here basking a little bit in the music of Audrey Assad. Not experienced it, check her out. You can find her on YouTube for sure. This is from her album Fortunate Fall. We've been having a conversation with Audrey Assad about her own background. You know, her father, an immigrant, a refugee actually from Syria, came over in 1972 when he was 17 years old with his mother. He was born in 1955. Was not a refugee of war, though certainly what's going on in Syria right now has to be breaking his heart and all those of Syrian descent, the terrible civil war there. But just keep that in mind. You know, we're coming up June 26, National Refugee Sunday, in a lot of churches. There's a tendency among people right now, after some of the violence we've been through, to be fearful when it comes to refugees and immigrants. But just recall, if we had refused Roy Assad refugee status and his mother, we would likely not be enjoying the beautiful art of Audrey Assad. So a little bit more of my conversation with Audrey Assad and her own family background. When you think about Syria, and of course Syria has been in the news for some time, it's terrible what's unfolding there and happening there. People oftentimes easily forget what a deep and rich Christian heritage there is in Syria.
Yeah,
I mean, going
absolutely.
Back to the time of St. Paul and Jesus himself. Mm-hmm. And talk about, you know, even personally at your own level, when you see things unfolding there and the misunderstandings that you see among your fellow Americans, what does that do in you?
Well, first of all, I think it's always a temptation for anybody to paint a culture with a monolithic brush. That all Arabs and all Syrians or even all Muslims or all Christians or whatever are this way and they do these things. And I see that happening an awful lot right now in America about Arabs, about Muslims in particular. But I guess the Syrian civil war for me has been a real wake-up call to just the degree to which we see people in the Middle East as other than us, things that are allowed to go on in Syria for many years, and for several years at this point, you know, whole villages cut off from food and from water and from aid, medical aid. And, you know, we sort of just shrug our shoulders and say, like, wow, this is sad. You know, if it were Belgium, if it were France, if it were England, what would our national attitude be? And I think the same thing about Africa. I think that when things happen in the Middle East and when they happen in Africa, we sort of go, wow, that's so far away and it's a shame, but, you know, what can we do? And I do truly feel that there is a measure of, I hesitate to use the word racism, but I would say an othering of the culture, you know, and it's really too bad because a lot of Americans view this as a Christian nation, which is debatable, but like you said, so much of our Christian heritage actually comes from that corner of the world. Most of the first Christians are from, St. Paul is from Damascus or from that area. He met the Lord on the road to Damascus. And so I just am heartbroken to see, you know, specifically with the Syrians, to see my people painted as, like, at best a charity case and at worst a total threat to our national security, you know. I understand people's worries. I do feel that, you know, we have a very vigorous process for vetting refugees. And no act of terrorism on this nation's soil has ever been committed by an actual refugee. Immigrants, yes, and those people who have bombed, you know, and whatnot, have been people who are here on visas, and that's much easier to get. It's much harder to come here as a refugee. So I think a lot of the fears are understandable but unfounded in this case. And I hope that people will open their hearts, you know, and think of my dad and think of me and what voices we might be missing out on in a very literal sense if we don't welcome refugees here, because my dad was welcomed here and I'm here because of him. And I am singing and doing what I do because I live here and because my dad is who my dad is.
We're talking with Audrey Assad, singer-songwriter, about her father as a Syrian refugee and her grandmother and how much that heritage shapes who she is. Yeah, it gets frustrating, I think, sometimes to see fellow Christians, to see fellow Catholics who are not able to view the refugee situation through the lens of their faith. They tend to do it through party ideology or whatever it may be, and that's really unfortunate.
It is, because we are not of this world, right? That's what we're taught to believe. We're in the world, we're not of the world. And I think it's interesting that, you know, the same people who say, get the government out of my gun cabinet, are also saying, get the government into, you know, all foreign policy and the Middle East and wars and all of this. And I see some great inconsistencies there. And I don't mean to make any specific commentary on gun control here. I just mean to say that we like the government to intervene where we feel it lines up with our ideology, you know? And I think if we're thinking about our faith first, you know, the Bible is explicit about this, that we are supposed to welcome the foreigner into our midst. It's all throughout the Psalms. And so I think, like, why would we not see that as an imperative? It's God's heart, you know? His heart is a refuge for us, and we are supposed to model that as our lives. And spirit of adoption, you know. And I just really believe that that is more important than party lines, more important than national security, in the sense that we are called to be radically hospitable. I really believe that as Christians, but that's our call. And the U.S. was kind enough to welcome my dad, and I hope we'll welcome more Syrians.
We think of the words of St. John Paul II, be not afraid. We can't let ourselves be dominated by fear. We forget who we are. Audrey Assad, as we approach June 26th, the National Refugee Sunday, thank you for sharing your story, putting a human face on this. Thank God for his providence in bringing your family to safety here and for the blessing that your family is, that your gifts are, and your family. So thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Really appreciate Audrey taking the time. She really puts a human face on the refugee, the circumstances of the refugee. She sort of made a side comment in terms of our biblical obligation as people of faith. We get from our fathers in the faith, the Jews. Think about this verse from Exodus chapter 22. This was following the Israelites' liberation from bondage in Egypt. And this command coming from the law revealed to Moses, "You shall not wrong a stranger or oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. You shall not afflict any widow or orphan." So you think about all those in refugee camps. Again, I understand, okay, there are practical realities and, you know, that we live in a worldwide community. And if it's not all America's burden, and those who advocate for refugees, we have to be willing to welcome them, not just in theory, but in reality. But the idea that we shut our gates or we shut our doors out of fear, I think, is a difficult one to square with our faith. Not hard to square maybe with our party ideology, but hard to square with our faith. There's a great resource. I'm going to put a link to this on the show's Facebook page about National Refugee Sunday, which is Sunday, June 26th. And Audrey, in fact, also has some resources on there as well. And so even some tunes that she has written and things that can be used for National Refugee Sunday. So I'm going to put a link to it on the show's Facebook page, and you can check it out. We here in this diocese, where we broadcast from, the Diocese of Lexington, we've been blessed by refugees from places like the Congo, for example, and others. So thanks to Audrey Saad. We're going to go out of this segment and out of this hour. We'll have Mary Graham at the beginning of the next hour, but I want us to go out with some of Audrey's music over the next minute and a half or so.
And peace, like a try.